We're grateful to be together today, and it is obvious here, looking out at who's here with us, we get to see who survived the Christmas holiday. There you are. You survived. Good for you. And now back to real life, right? My wife has a period of grieving as we take down the Christmas tree. I let her, I kind of leave her alone for a week as she tears her clothes and she takes on ashes and sackcloth and imagines how long it's going to be before the next year. So you are the best version of yourself when who you are drives what you do. Let me say that again. You're the best version of yourself when who you are drives what you do. When you become a new parent, your identity changes. Some of you know this. You've become a new parent and your identity changed. And when your identity changes, you naturally do different things than you did before. Let me say that again. When your identity changes, you naturally do different things than you did before. You naturally do it. It naturally happens. Why does it happen? Because there's been a change in your identity. Your new identity generates new behaviors. When I became a dad at 22 years old, a lot changed. I mean, I changed a lot. And one of the things I remember changing was I became a little bit of a small, tiny handyman. Let me explain what I mean before I get ahead of myself. I had to install in my kitchen childproof gizmos and gadgets. And I had to build baby furniture with my bare hands. I had to assemble things that I had never assembled before. I became a pack mule. How many of you remember becoming a first-time parent and you couldn't conceive of the things that you now had to carry? And the reason you had to carry all those things was because there was an unlimited possibilities of what could potentially occur with this infant, and you had to be prepared for every possible unlimited possibility that there could potentially be when you are facing an infant emergency. So you packed yourself down and you carried things in the house and around the house. And I also became a party pooper. I was still going to all the same parties and the same gatherings, but at a certain time had to pick up, scoop up the family and head home and instantly went from being a partier to a party pooper because, as you know, with an infant, there's a schedule to maintain. Which also means I was transformed into a schedule follower who adopted and followed a relatively strict feeding and napping schedule to help prevent this infant from turning into a cyclone. We had to keep it on a schedule. And so these are all new things that I did. Now, at first, I was a couple. When my wife and I got married, we became a couple. And then we had new behaviors that were generated from our new identity when we became parents. And it started to flow naturally. There are things that we naturally had to do when we transitioned. They were very distinct and very noticeable changes in our behavior. Our new identity forced new behaviors. And Paul the Apostle, he takes some time in the book of Romans and he reads and he preaches and teaches to the new Christians in Rome. And here's what he says. Don't forget that before your faith in Jesus, you were spiritually dead. Then, through Christ and receiving the gospel by faith, you were born into a new life in the Spirit, and you were adopted into God's family as children, and you have a bright and secure future. And then he kind of pauses here after explaining all of that in about 11 chapters. And in chapter 12, Paul says, so because of your new identity, because of your the fact that you were dead, now you're alive, you were isolated, now you've been adopted into a family, because you have come to life in the Spirit, you have become a part of a new family, and this new family is going to demonstrate new behaviors. There's going to be ways of identifying the Christian family with noticeable and distinct new behaviors. Look at Romans chapter 12 with me, if you would. We're going to read verses 10. And then we'll read 13 through 16, and we'll tackle some of that today, and some of it next week. Romans 12, verse 10. verses 10 and then 13 through 16. In the New Living Translation, here's what I have. It says, love each other with genuine affection. See, don't forget, Paul was saying, now that you have new life in Christ, now that you've been adopted into a new family, here's what it looks like. Here are the new behaviors that come from your new belief after you've beheld who God is. He says, love each other with genuine affection and take delight in honoring each other. Skip down to 13. When God's people are in need, be ready to help them. Always be eager to practice hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Don't curse them. Pray that God will bless them. Be happy with those who are happy and weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with each other. Don't be too proud to enjoy the company of ordinary people and don't think you know it all. So here's who we are as believers. Here's who we are. We are adopted children. Megan concisely and effectively described that today. We are adopted children of God who live and care for each other as a family. Not as a club, not as an organization, not as a country club, but instead, this is very specific, Paul is teaching his church that you have now been adopted and brought into and gathered and connected to a family, and in this family, you will live together and care for each other. And that's important for us. If you're an American Christian, which I'm assuming most of you are, it's unique for us because we tend to have mastered individualization. And we tend to have elevated and celebrated isolation. So it's much easier for you and I to live our lives separately, isolated and alone, and we can get very comfortable and find it to be a natural fit. And yet, what God has done is he has invited us into new relationship to live with new people who've been made new in the inner life and also to receive and give a new kind of care for each other. What kind of care is that? It's the same kind of care that you get in a family. And as a family, we see it as our responsibility to personally care for the needs of one another, both physical needs and spiritual needs. So we're now a family of missionary servants, and we are sent as disciples who make disciples, and when we decide to leave our life of isolation, and some people have done that. Some of you have done that, and for some it took a lot of time. You were isolated for much of your early Christian life, and then you kind of eventually kind of evolved into new relationships, and for others it hasn't quite happened yet. You've gotten comfortable and safer in isolation, but a lot of us, when we decide to leave our life of isolation behind, we become a part of a church family. We joined a new kind of people with very distinct and noticeable characteristics. If you've recently listened to someone describe their attempt at looking for a new church. Sometimes we just call it shopping for a church. Or maybe you have been someone recently who has been looking for a new church or shopping for a new church. Or maybe you remember that it wasn't so long ago you were shopping for a new church. You were looking for some church to settle down in. And many of us have spent a lot of time and have put a lot of effort into trying to find the right church. Isn't that important to find the right fit? We here at the North Central Church family, we as leaders don't believe that our church family is the perfect fit for everyone. We don't believe that's true. We believe that we're one house in a neighborhood of homes. And by that I mean, when you think about visiting homes, when you're shopping for a new home, there might be a home that is for sale, and 25 people go through the home, and 24 of the family say, nah, that's not really a fit for us. That's not what we're aiming for. That's not where we're going to settle down. And yet one family comes through and says, oh, this is perfect. This is exactly it. And we believe that we're a part of an entire neighborhood of churches called the North Central New York Church Family that God uses to advance his own kingdom. But when we're shopping for churches, most of us share similar values. We have the same important aspects that we're looking for when we're trying to find a new church to settle into. One of the things that you'll hear people say is they're looking for a church that's nearby, right? It's important. The distance to travel is important. Other people will say that they're looking for specific programs to be to plug themselves into and to plug their kids into. And other people want to make sure that the church family is nice and that there's a level of friendliness and warmth. And others want to know what's happening, and they check the church calendar to keep kind of get a feel for what's happening in the church events and the church programming. And others say, well, I like the preaching. Which is, it's an important question, and all of these are important questions, actually. People want to know what style the preaching is. People really want to know how long the preaching is. That's what they really want to know. They want to know if the pastor is going to be both interesting and funny. Not every church has a pastor like you do who's tall and dark and handsome, but they want to know those things. They want to know, what does he look like? What does she look like? Do they preach the Bible? And all these questions are important, but what if most people actually find the church they're looking for, but after years of church attendance, there really isn't much fruitful life change? What if all the things they were looking for when they were shopping for a church, they find and they settle in, and then years later there's not much fruitful life change? Isn't it possible that we're getting it wrong? When we're getting it wrong, it's so important for us to be honest. If we were getting it wrong, would you be honest? Can we be honest? What if it's possible that when we get it wrong, nothing really changes if we're unwilling to admit it? And if nothing changes, we miss out on what God has designed us to experience as a church family. If your involvement in a church family is shaping your schedule, but it isn't shaping your life, you're missing out. We're missing out on what God has designed for us. If we have a church family and we're involved in such a way as it shapes our schedule, but not our lives, then we're missing out on what God expected the church family to help us to discover. Make sense? We're possibly getting it wrong. And in our consumer culture, and this is one of the reasons why we get it wrong, and the problem is this: we are immersed in a consumer culture. And what does that mean? It means that it's far too easy to sell ourselves as a church family with what we offer rather than selling ourselves with who we are. And that's a problem. It's a problem to work to make ourselves appealing as it relates to what we offer to people rather than who we are. And far too many of us think of our church more as a place than a people. Think about how many times in a single day or a single week you refer to going to church and things that are happening at church, right? For many of us, it is instinctive to believe, and it's instinctive for us to live in such a way as to somehow imagine in our mind or define in our mind that our church is a location, it's a place to go, and it's a place to be. Rather than thinking of our church more as a people. And when some people think of their church, they think of how much they like the pastor, they enjoy the programs, and they're fond of the property. For other people, when they think of their church, they instinctively think of a building where they're represented by a board who manages a budget. But there's trouble for us when a church is judged by its pastor and not its people, primarily. And there's trouble for us when a church is evaluated by its programs and not its people. After Jesus, one of the most valuable things that God offers humans is a new group of people to live with. And so God gives lonely and isolated humans a new family to love and a new family to be loved by. He doesn't give them a new place to go. He doesn't give them something to add to their schedule and to their Sunday mornings. Instead, he gives them a new people to love and be loved by. And he doesn't offer us these places, he offers us these people. We never go to church. We never actually spend time at church. We are the church. When you put your faith in Jesus and he fills you with his spirit, an indwelling spirit, and he brings your spirit alive, he adopts you into his family, and he makes you a child of his. And when you become his child, he becomes your father, and then you end up with brothers and sisters. I fondly remember growing up with men and women referring to themselves as brother and sister. Some of you still do. That's okay. Some of you are too young to remember that. Others of you have the same memories I do, where it was brother and sister. We joked in college that we were often spent most of our Sundays with Pastor Pillow and Brother Bed, Sister Sheets. You get it? Yeah, I was dumb then too. I don't know why we ever, It was a Baptist joke, I think. It probably wasn't. So, where does our family come from? Do we just drive around and look for a fit someplace close enough where we like the preaching and we're comfortable in the seats and we are greeted warmly? Is that how we become a part of the church? Do we just decide where to go and drive up to this location one day? Here's what we learn. Jesus teaches us this. He says, upon your saving faith, God adopts us into a new faith family, and it's a global family. Global family. And here's what he says. Jesus teaches this in John chapter 1. But all who believed him and accepted him, he gave the right to become children of God. They are reborn with a birth that comes from God. And what that means is we have a new father, we have new brothers and new sisters. Now, if I were a TV preacher, this is the part where I would say, so turn to your neighbor and say, what's up, bro? But I'm not a TV preacher. So I'm not going to say that. But you have brothers and you have sisters that are people in your faith family who you are responsible to love and be loved by. You are responsible to be cared for and to care for them. Jesus said that those who live in his way and obey his Father have evidence that they belong to him and are truly his family. God has always desired a people, and he did from Genesis all the way to Revelation. God desires and designs a people, an earthly family, who would live in such a way as to help make Jesus famous. And some of you, you're thinking to yourself, another family? Are you serious? I already have a family, and I can hardly stand the one that I already have. Now I've got another one. Others are thinking, another family? That is exciting, because you can hardly imagine life without the family you already have, and then God gives you another one to be a part of. But this new family has a specific role. There's a specific identity with new behaviors. And God has formed us into a family who helps make Jesus famous by being a disciple-making family, making disciples, which is our, as a believer, is our mission, and we're able to do so in an effective and healthy way right within a church family. Now, you've got notes, perhaps, in your hand, and you'll notice here that our big idea is this. We are adopted children of God who live and care for each other as a family. So what does that mean? Paul goes on to talk about three specific things. And then he says, and then there's two things that will mess it all up. Next week, we're going to talk a little bit more about that. But this week, we're going to talk about what are the three things that identify, what are the new behaviors of a faith family? Our church family really will only make disciples if we selflessly invest ourselves into being a church family, not a group of church attenders. We have to selflessly invest ourselves. It doesn't take a lot of energy to be a church attender. I talk to people regularly who say, you know, for a long time, a part of my adult life, I was a regular church attender. You know, I would go, I would kind of do my time, and then I would leave. And then some people describe how they crossed over at one point and they opened their heart and they opened their lives to the people. And they became a part of the family. And that there was transformational experience there that occurred because of that. So here's what it looks like for a church family to live and care for each other. And it's really very, very specific. Paul gets very specific. Our church family will make disciples if we, number one, if we really love each other. In verse 10, here's what Paul says to the new Christians in Rome. He says, love each other, but it's not just a generic love. He says, love each other with genuine affection. Genuine affection. Now, here's a question for you. How can you get grown men to hug total strangers? How can you get a grown man to hug another grown man who's a total stranger? Here's how you do it. You give them a ticket to their favorite sports team and you send them to the stadium. And when their team scores, they look for other grown men to grab onto. This happens. Starts with a high five, but as the game gets going and they get all worked up, they start kind of hugging each other, and you're watching grown men hug total strangers. And these are the same men that in the church family, when it's guest and greeting time, they're like... This happens, and what this means is that most of us have some level in our hearts of affection that when we truly love someone, it comes out of us. And for a lot of men and for a lot of women, it can be a sport or it can be something else. But when we deeply love something, you will express it with some kind of affection. Now, we recognize that in our church worship service on Sunday, that there's a lot of introverted people who don't really care for the guest and greeting time. Don't raise your hands. You wouldn't anyway, because you might be an introvert and you wouldn't want people to notice you, so you wouldn't raise your hand anyway. But we recognize that for a lot of people, it's not very comfortable. In fact, research has recently been shown that a lot of people say that the reason that they went to a church worship service and never returned is because they had a greeting time. Isn't that fascinating? And for all of you extroverts, you're saying, that's one of the reasons why I like to be a part of a worship service. Connecting with people and getting some time to express some very, very specific and deliberate affection. Well, we do this because we believe that there's a little time that we have to carve out when we're together corporately to let us connect, to give us an opportunity to express genuine affection for each other and to each other. And when you're here for a worship service, you need to know ahead of time that we start with greeting you with a handshake, but we hope to get you to know you well enough that we don't do handshakes anymore. We embrace you in an affectionate hug to say, we care about you. We don't just want to know your name, we want to know your story. And as we get to know you and get familiar with you, we'd like to trade handshakes in for hugs to say, that's what families do. Now, not everybody's okay with that. Someone told me one time they visited a church and the usher at the door had a name tag on and it said, the hugger. Now, I think there's such a thing as going too far, right? They might as well put on there, the stalker. I mean, you might as well. It's the same thing when you're walking in the front door. Even before you're here for a worship service, it is important to portray yourself and to express genuine affection. We're working on a refresh of our website, and if we want to do well, there's a lot of challenging aspects of a website that are technical. But then there is another part of the website that's even more difficult, I believe, and that is generating a specific kind of content on the website. And what I mean is that it's far more difficult to feature who we are than it is to feature what we offer. It's much easier to demonstrate a menu of programs that we offer to people to get involved in and spend their time with it, but it's very difficult on a website to present to the general public who we are as a people. To be sure that you're not just promoting programming, but to say we are a specific kind of people. It's much easier to tell people we have something to offer for every need and every niche that their family wants. It's far more difficult to tell people this is the kind of church family we are. These are the kind of people that you will discover. Where do you put on your website that in this church family will love you even if you're unlovely? Where do you put that? Where do you put on your church website that will respect you even when you haven't been respectable? Where do you put on your church website that will forgive you when you fail? Where do you put on your church website that will tell you the truth, but we're going to do it in love? Where do you put that we won't avoid you even after we let you hurt our feelings? Where do you put that? See what I'm saying? There are aspects of behaviors that represent a group, a Christian family that is difficult to portray with genuine affection. Where do you put on your church website that we're willing to learn your name? We're also willing to spend enough time with you to listen to your story and to love you whether you end up the hero in your story or the villain in your story. Where do you put that? How do you... You know what churches do? Church families, where God is at work growing them in health, they are able to express genuine affection for each other. They delight in honoring each other. They don't just affectionately express themselves in love, but in this loving relationship that they have with each other, they honor each other. Every time someone asks me and finds out that I'm the pastor of this church, I instinctively tell them how humbling it is, what an honor it is. I instinctively tell them how much I love you all, my church family. Instinctively, it's just a outflowing when I talk to someone outside our church family. But you know, as I was reading through this text, and I was praying through this text, and I was writing down my own notes, I sensed in my own heart that I don't know if you know how much I love you. I don't know if I communicate to you often enough how meaningful you are to me. And I don't think I found enough ways to personally and publicly honor you, all of you. Though there is affection in my heart, and though there is honor in my heart for you, I have to do a better job of expressing honor, and especially expressing honor to our long-established church attenders. Some of you who elected me in 2010 as your senior pastor, and you're the ones over the past 10 to 30 years who have faithfully invested your lives and sacrificed your lives and spent time with people. And you have helped to shape this church family's reputation as faithful and solid and warm and alive with loving care for one another. But by intentionally focusing on North Central's future, it occurred to me recently that I am sure that I have unintentionally made some of our established church family members feel marginalized or feel minimized. And I got to tell you, I regret that that's possible, because that's not what's in my heart. It's not in my heart to marginalize or minimize anybody. It's in my heart to honor you. It's in my heart to express affection to you and to express this very same kind of honor to you. And it has nothing to do with your age. I do believe it has to do with my own limited capacity to connect and care for the growing number of hundreds of people attending and participating in our church family at this time. But I need to honor each of you more. I need to honor each of you and find ways to better express openly the honor that you deserve as a part of our church family, and also the affection that I have in my heart for you. And here's what we know. We know that love is just not a feeling of fondness for one another, but love is action, isn't it? I mean, you think about what God said. God said, I love you, and then he didn't just sit back and say, so I hope you know that. Instead, he demonstrates his love for us, and that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. There was a demonstration of his love. And that's an aspect of being a church family, is not just loving each other with genuine affection, but there's an action part. And in your notes, it goes like this. Respond to each other's needs. A church family that is healthy and making disciples and connected in real family doesn't just love each other, but there's an action that flows out of that where they respond to one another's needs. And we're ready to help insiders, and we're eager to host outsiders. Because this is what Paul says. Paul says, if you're a healthy, vibrant church family who cares for one another, you are ready to help those who are already there, and you're eager to host people who are not quite there yet. They're not quite a part of your church family yet. And so he describes here in verse 13, when God's people are in need, a church family is ready to help them. And he says, always be eager to practice hospitality. Help people and host people. A healthy family isn't focused on either the outsider or the insider. A healthy church family is able to meet the needs of both. Be ready to help the insider. God's people are in need, and it's a part of the responsibility of the church family to meet those needs. Paul says you start inside and you meet the needs of the believers so that there's an abundance there, then they can meet the needs of the non-believers. And to really help someone, you have to be willing to go beyond knowing someone's name and get to know their story and get to know what their needs really are. Now, in unhealthy churches, this gets very difficult because unhealthy and stagnated churches, they have eventually they grow cold enough and at times uncaring enough. And in large part, it's because many of our unhealthy churches are still relying on the senior pastor for primary care. But in healthy churches, the senior pastor provides critical care and the body provides primary care. Especially when the church family is growing and the needs are becoming exponential. Healthy and growing churches, like ours, are satisfied when their pastor becomes the equipper. And what that means is the pastor's role is to help people help people. The senior pastor role becomes more of an equipper. And as our family grows, this past month in December, for the first time in our worship attendance, a church of over 400 people, this is something that I've needed to reprioritize, and here's one way our church leaders are helping people help people. We've recruited a volunteer who will now serve as our care director, and she will coordinate and manage a church-wide system of care and communication to help connect people and their needs, and also connect people who are need meters with what the needs really are. And this particular, you see her up here, this is Lisa. Lisa Heitman is volunteered to serve as our care director. Now, Lisa's the one on the left, by the way, just to be clear, because I know some of you didn't bring your glasses with you. And Lisa will oversee a team of people. Currently, the team is Al Anderson, Herb Bender, and Dave Powell. They like to refer to themselves as the Three Musketeers, but I prefer referring to them as the Unholy Trinity. Now, in this role, this person will not be the primary caregiver in our church family. This person will be developing and directing a system of care. This role will discover and communicate what the needs are, will coordinate ways for people to care for and contribute to the church family in fresh ways, especially for those who want to finish their race, their Christian faith, strong in the church family. They want to finish as well as they started. And this role will gather and lead a team of adults who will generate practical ways for adults who want to care and for those who want to be cared for, and this team will be responsible for discovering those. Now, we're going to kick off this system by getting all of our church family together in February at a brunch. And in our brunch meeting, we're going to have a specific purpose, and the specific purpose is to connect our family and to better discover what the needs in our church family are so that we can organize and systematize how to meet those needs through people. Better connected, better communication, better care. And the reason that we're doing that is because we believe that healthy church family is ready to help people who have needs. They are ready to help. They are responsive to the needs of people when they surface. And a healthy church family isn't only devoted to caring for insiders, but they will also be eager to host the outsider, be eager to practice hospitality. What is hospitality? It's not just a warm handshake. It's inviting someone into your home for a warm bed and a hot meal. And when someone is eager to practice hospitality, that means that we're not just looking out for insiders, but where our eyes are outward for outsiders, and we pursue people who are outsiders, and we're eager to invite them to become insiders. Hospitality specifically is different from being polite. It means opening your home, opening your heart, opening your dinner table, and inviting people to temporarily make your home their home. And that's what hospitality means. Now, if you you may have already noticed it may be more difficult than I think to recognize that there's a growing number of new faces in our church family, and you all come from various backgrounds. You come from the obviously Assemblies of God background. We have former Catholics, Baptists, former and present mainline denomination, Charismatics, unchurched, etc. And how can we possibly get everybody on the same page? How is that possible? How do we prevent these divisive battles back and forth based on what someone's doctrinal and faith backgrounds are? Here's how we have done it. We have taken this verse to heart, verse 16, live in harmony with each other. How do you live in harmony with this many people from this many backgrounds? Here's what we do. Number three, we rehearse what we agree on. We rehearse and remain focused on, and then rehearse and remain focused on the things that we agree on. Because we agree on gospel essentials, that's what we focus on. And we that helps us to keep our focus off of divisive peripherals. So, and how do we do that? How do we do that? We've purposely elevated gospel essentials over non-essentials, but it starts right here on the platform. And what I mean by that is this, that the weekly message that's coming from the platform cannot be, pastors and leaders cannot be focused on preaching divisive politics, damaging pet peeves, as essential for the church family. It has to be clear that what happens in our messages from the platform are the essentials for every church family, the essentials you discover here in the scriptures, and the essentials for saving faith, the gospel essentials that help someone meet and grow in their faith in Jesus and rely on the authority of God's word. And we believe God's church ought to have agreement on the essentials. And in the peripherals, there is freedom, but in all things, love. This is how we address new members and discover membership. So when we're getting it right, we know everyone's story. We don't just know their name. We don't just recognize their face. And it gets harder and harder when there's new faces. When we're getting it right, we make a difference like a big church family, but we're still able to make disciples like a small church family. We're able to make a difference because we're a big church family, but we're still able to make disciples like a small church family. We're able to worship corporately like this as a big church family, but we're able to love like a small church family. We're able to care and connect like a small church family. When we're getting it right, we're able to offer the non-believing world a family of people to share their life with, not just a calendar full of events to fill their life with. By the way, our church family's hearts should be full, but our calendars shouldn't. And when we're getting it right, we'll be a church family who values being together over being busy. When every month we get together and we share communion, and it reminds us that we're all the same. We're all pretty ordinary. We all have an unbelievably overwhelming dependence on who Jesus is and what he's done on our behalf for our good and for God's glory.